Good morning. There's talk in Washington of the creation of a similar government organization similar to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mae to buy mortgages that are at or near bankruptcy to allow borrowers to refinance on easier terms. Do you support that vehicle?
I'm aware that Congressman Mark Kirk, used to be my congressman when I lived in Illinois, has put forward a proposal that's similar to what you just described, and it has some, I guess, some similarity to an RTC kind of concept. And I'm not really in a position to comment on specific legislation, but I think the ideas around some of these proposals are constructive and that we should take a good look at them. Of course, it's always a matter of the details. But, I think they deserve serious consideration. Yes, Ben, number four.
I was wondering if, I mean, I've heard a lot of the positions on why the economy is strong and why we still have a relatively premier dominance in the global economy. But one of the things that I haven't heard a lot about is the weakness in the dollar. And I was wondering if you could maybe elaborate on that a little bit, why it's not discussed and what the repercussions are for us going forward.
Well, it's one of those subjects that we pretty carefully handle, that is the dollar, and typically Fed officials don't talk about the value of the dollar. The brief, so to speak, of discussing the dollar really belongs to the Treasury Department. But certainly I can say that we've seen a long period of depreciation of the dollar. There's been benefits from that for the U.S. economy. The balance of trade and balance of payments deficit is actually narrowing. The export component of our economy, it has shown very, very good strength in recent months. As I talk to people around the 6th District and around the country who are in real companies and real jobs, if they are exporters, they say the external market is very strong, so they're enjoying the weak dollar. I think the principal concern should be orderly versus disorderly changes in the value of the dollar. An orderly continuing depreciation, in my opinion, can be managed. It's disorderly markets that really are the concern. Nancy, number two.
Dennis, could you give us a little feel for from the southeastern region and from your particular district, what are some of the things that you foresee is important to our region?
Well, we are a region that is heavy in residential construction, real estate, commercial development for a number of reasons. We still have in-migration to the Sun Belt. States like Florida, of course, that have sort of leveled off in terms of their inward and outward moves of people, have for years, Florida for years has been receiving, been a net receiver of people and been a big construction area. That's been good for the economy for several years, and now it becomes, to some extent, a bit of an Achilles heel. I would say, particularly in Florida, in South Florida, we've seen really a severe downturn in the housing markets and in the residential construction area. But across the Southeast, it's soft in some states or some pockets within states, particularly in areas of Alabama and Tennessee. The real estate markets really are somewhat better than the United States as an overall market. But in general, we're seeing the real estate and residential and housing problems develop in our region. And, so we're very concerned as to when these markets bottom out. The linkage that is concerning is falling house prices affecting consumer behavior because of the loss of equity, in turn, therefore, affecting spending, and the consumer represents about two-thirds of our gross domestic product. And so we're very concerned about the direction of house prices and are looking for indications that they come down. I had a conversation recently with the CEO here in Atlanta of a major builder It was his opinion, and I thought it was an interesting opinion, that if we can get from 9 to 10 months inventory in housing, that is houses for sale, existing houses for sale and new construction houses for sale, down to the neighborhood of about 6 months inventory, the market, along with the lower interest rates, should begin to turn a bit. And that's a point at which he would become more optimistic. So we're following that very carefully. Now, Nancy, the district, the region is not all about construction. It's, in fact, a very diversified region. Interestingly, when I lived here before, between 1978 and 88, the broad feel in the corporate community was that there were a lot of old industries in the South, particularly textiles and apparel. And that was the identification of the region. Now, 20-some years later, it's a very well-diversified economy across the Southeast with some strong areas in what you might call new or emerging industries, a very strong auto industry in Georgia, Alabama, and now in Mississippi and Tennessee as well. So it's well-diversified, and our economists of the Fed have tried to study the industrial configuration of the U.S. versus the industrial configuration of the Southeast. And they are very similar, so similar that we try to promote the idea that what we learn from the Southeast is relevant to the national economy as a whole. So that broad, diversified economy is feeling the same downturn that I described in my remarks. And it's going to be a period here of I would say, low economic growth. And we hope in the second half of the year that we'll see an upturn. And so the region, the district, should resemble the national economy. Long answer, but thanks for the question. Mike, number two.
Thank you. I wonder if you could speak to what appears to be a mismatch between the tools that you have at your disposal to address subprime and all of the malaise and the economic outcome of that, and what appeared to be the issue was underwriting standards at one level, which was 100% loan to value. You now have, as you mentioned, falling house prices. You have approximately 2 years worth of loan originations in the marketplace that were at 100% loan to value. Lowering interest rates doesn't necessarily help you going from 6% to 5% if you can't qualify with the collateral that you have on the back side of that. I don't know where that's being addressed, and I don't see how that outcome is being changed.
Well, the practices in the mortgage market are being addressed, and the Fed, particularly the Board of Governors in Washington, is taking a lead in this and has made proposals recently to Congress that relate to HOPA, the Home Ownership Equity Protection Act. And we proposed several changes in the practices of the mortgage industry or several regulatory requirements to deal with some of those problems. That is a partial response to your question, because it's aimed at fixing the more flagrant, flagrant practices that helped to cause this problem. Your question seemed to be more oriented to how do you help a qualified, perhaps young, first-time buyer who doesn't have a lot of equity get into the market in an era in which clearly we're going to revert back to much more conservative mortgage standards. Is that the thrust of the question? Number two.
Sorry. What I'm trying to isolate is the issue is that you have a 2-year supply of homeowners that have all walked into a loan that they now cannot handle, because when it resets at 300 to 500 basis points higher. All of those people will now fall into some category of distress at one level or another, mm-hmm. potentially. None of the Federal Reserve policies, I'm not disparaging the Federal Reserve. The issue is the interest rates are fine. I'm sure we all appreciate it. But how do you address, on a going backwards basis, all of these people have a 100% loan to value on their homes for 2 years worth of new homes. I mean, the Beazer Homes of the world lent money, and now all those people are up for a refinance. They can't requalify. So I don't understand where they go and how you impact the economy going forward with that as your issue.
Well, of course, the monetary policy actions, the lowering of interest rates, perhaps at least change some of the numbers that will be most affected by the resets, because at least the reset calculations may, depending upon the contract they're in, be lower. So that helped by just lowering the overall cost of money, and we hope that will influence it. There's, I'm sure, a wide spectrum of mortgagees who simply got into mortgages they shouldn't have, and our advice to them, and this is we're formally doing this through interaction with various groups like the Consumer Credit Credit Counseling Service and other groups. We're advising them to contact their lender, work with their lender as best they can, or their servicer, to come up with some accommodation and try to restructure their obligations so they can stay in their homes. And I think some of that will succeed, but some will not. Again, mic number two.
Yes. After the last two rate cuts especially, saw a lot of focus that said the Fed's really anchoring towards the results of the stock market as opposed to the overall economy. I want to get your thoughts on, has there been a change of focus and how that affects, how one affects the other?
Well, our focus, I would say our focus religiously is on the general economy and on the real economy. But I'll speak for myself. We can't ignore the financial markets and the potential of spillover or feedback loops or whatever you want to call them from the general markets from the financial markets to the general economy. So we have to certainly take into consideration the state of the markets. And then at a certain point, there is a responsibility of the Federal Reserve to pay attention to and to try to deal with any problems that are really systemic financial stability kinds of problems. So when you get into a certain area, clearly what's going on in the markets becomes an important focus in order to stabilize the financial world, because it will, if it continues with that kind of volatility, inevitably affect the real economy. But the principal focus is the general economy, or what the economists call the real economy. Mic number five, Mr. Levine.
With an economic stimulus package being discussed in Washington currently, some are arguing that the short-term impact of that should be contemplated with a more broad tax reform. If you could share your thoughts on that. And then a little more specifically, and important to people in this room, can you share your thoughts on tax reform as it relates to private equity and carried interest?
Well, there is discussion. Again, I'm going to make the same statement I made earlier, that it's really inappropriate for me or any of us to talk about specific legislation. There is some proposal to lower corporate income taxes, as I understand, in the package. And as a broad statement, I'm in the school that, let me put it this way, I recognize the double taxation issue in corporate income taxes and then either capital gains or dividends to securities owners being taxed as well. I don't think I'll comment beyond that. I don't have a specific number that I think makes sense, but I am very broadly supportive of competitive corporate income taxes, I guess is the way I'd put it, competitive on an international basis. As regards the private equity, the proposals related to treatment of general partners, capital gains related to carried interest, I've actually heard friends in the private equity community argue either side. That is to say, there are, and you know very well, there are some who agree with the idea that it ought to be treated as ordinary income as opposed to capital gains. You know, again, this strikes me as a fairly heavy territory to wade into, particularly in this room. And since it's out there and being discussed on the Hill, I'm going to dodge it. We can talk offline, perhaps. Thank you very much. It was great to be with you this morning.